Hey guys, Coach Christy here. As is my pattern, I have some ideas rolling around in my brain that I'd like to get some clarity on, and sometimes just talking it out helps me, and I hope in return it helps you too. So today's topic, what I really want to talk to you guys about is why horses, right? I believe personally, like everyone that I've met in life either loves horses or is pretty indifferent about them. There's not a lot of like, I like horses a little bit. Either you're madly obsessed and can't live without them, or you just as soon, you know, see them in movies and pictures and that's good enough. So, you know, Pat Parilli often says there's two types of people in the world. People who love horses and the other kind. And I have found that to be mostly true in a lot of my experience. So I was born the horse crazy person. But let's back up a little bit. This podcast is likely to be much longer than what I normally do. Normally I try to be brief and give you a little spurts of something to think about, something that might spark something for you in your horsemanship journey. But more and more what I am consumed with mentally is a desire to get clarity on why I do what I do, and in hopes that if I gain clarity on myself and what motivates me and what doesn't and that sort of thing, then I can help you to do the same and, you know, lead you towards a more deliberate outcome rather than just getting swept up in life and let life happen to you. I want to create a beautiful life that I did on purpose. And I think that the way to begin that journey is to understand why we do what we do. So if you, quick little history lesson on me, and if you want more details about my life's story, I do have a book out called Becoming Me by Christy Smith. You can get it on Amazon and Barnes & Noble or any place really that sells books. And I would love for you to go buy it and read about my story. I shared my story because as I take this journey with my horsemanship and developing a business and my fascination with personal growth and anything that has to do with understanding the human psyche and, you know, what makes us tick, that sort of thing. The more I delve into these things, the more I realize that my story is not unique, and that by sharing my story, I might help someone to understand that they're not alone and that, you know, things can and do get better. So I learned what it felt like to not belong at a very young age, and I feel like that hurt that I experienced as a small child has likely participated in every decision I've ever made in my life. So my mother essentially abandoned me when I was 6 months old. She attempted to re-enter my life when I was around 4, I believe. It was before I'd started school. And so just before I sort of met her at the age of 4, my stepmother, who I thought was my mother, had to sit me down and explain to me that she did not give birth to me, that she was not my mother. So that was the first really conscious moment of me realizing that I didn't fully belong where I lived. And even before that, I'm told that when I was born, my mother had a dry birth, and because there was some concern about, you know, being exposed to pathogens or whatever, that I spent the first 2 weeks of my life in an incubator to support my immune system. I wasn't preemie, I was actually late, but I was not allowed skin-on-skin contact until I was 2 weeks old. And I actually feel like that piece of my, you know, early development has a lot to do with my personality as well. My extreme desire for independence and ability to take care of myself to the point of, you know, not being good at asking for help or, you know, being able to lean on people very, very easily is, you know, goes back that far. And you know, there's real truth, because I've seen it in the animal kingdom, on imprinting, right? That those first 2 weeks of life matter. They form. That's where the bond between, you know, mother and child is formed. And, you know, the child learns to depend on the mother in those first 2 weeks. Well, I didn't have that. I didn't have the imprinting process in the first 2 weeks. And then even after that, I didn't have that. When I was an infant, I spent a lot of time in a lot of different places. My aunt took care of me quite a bit, and I know I spent some time with grandparents and things like that. So I never came to rely on one individual as my permanent, like, as long as I have you here, everything's going to be okay, right? So that's when my why started. It was formed in those early, early years on, okay, so I don't belong here, I don't belong there. I guess the only thing I can really count on is my own ability to suck it up and take care of myself. So that happened at a really early age. And then my first real memories of getting to be around horses was right around eight or nine years old. I spent a lot of time off and on with my Aunt Peggy. By the time I was 12, I was living with her full time, and feel, you know, comfortable saying that she did the majority of raising me. But I think I started riding my bike out to her house, which was a pretty hefty bike ride, especially for an eight-year-old. But I liked being at Aunt Peggy's house because Aunt Peggy had horses. And the moment I got to do anything with horses, I felt a sense of belonging that I had never felt in my life before. By the time I was 8 years old, my dad was divorcing his second wife and, you know, dating his third. And so I had already changed schools multiple times, changed homes multiple times. It had gone through a divorce twice, you know, been the child of divorce. Actually, my parents' marriage was actually annulled, but, you know, and so at 8 years old, there was a lot of chaos in my life. And for some reason, just being near the horses, just the sight of them, the smell of them, even if I didn't get to ride them, just being around them, I felt a sense of normalcy for some reason. I don't know why that's the best way I know how to describe it. And, you know, and then once I did get to start riding them, you know, being taught by my cousins how to saddle and mount and steer and go places on them, boy, I was hooked. Not only did I feel like I belonged, I felt joy and I felt purpose and I felt connection and I felt important, right? I felt special. And, you know, that became my label as a very young kid. I was that horse crazy girl. That's who I was. That's how I defined myself. And that obsession, of course, has, stuck with me. You know, a lot of girls outgrow it in teenage years. And I did not. I had two great loves in my child. Well, three great loves in my childhood, you know, in my, you know, grade school, junior high, and high school years. Music, I play the trumpet and was obsessed with that. Softball, I loved to play softball as a kid, and horses. There were boys in there, but they were never really a primary motivator. They're usually secondary for me. Probably because intimate relationships were not very well modeled to me, and so I didn't A, know how to do it, and B, didn't see any examples of people really benefiting from that kind of partnership. So I didn't ever really get very obsessed with boys. You know, I did have boyfriends, some long-term boyfriends, but that wasn't all I thought about. So fast forward now to adulthood, and I really have come to realize the purpose of horses in my life right now. And I know their purpose can change and grow and, you know, bend and shape based on the lessons I'm learning. But I think that, you know, my natural horsemanship journey, especially Pirelli in particular, of course, has sparked this obsession around developing a life that I don't feel like I need a vacation from. That is why I do what I do. I do what I do because I love horses, and being around them gives me a purpose. It gives me connection. It gives me joy, and peace. And I want to share that, those feelings, with as many people as possible. And the best way I can do that right now is to own my story and walk my talk. So what all of this, you know, wandering around in my past and present is leading me to is that unless we accept things the way they are and embrace your current reality, we cannot have any hope of making them better. I think a lot of us feel like if we fight the good fight, that's how we make things better. But it's been my experience, the more that I resist the way things are, the less effective I am at changing them. And the thing that I'm learning to embrace is that I have spent the majority of my life turning myself inside out to fit someone else's version of who they think I am. It started for me as a young kid because I didn't have a good maternal influence in my life. I was a daddy's girl all the way up until I was about 12 years old, and I'll explain that in a minute. I wanted to do any and everything he said so that he would be proud of me, so that he would brag about me, so that I was accepted by him no matter what. So I did things I didn't want to do. I pretended to like things that I didn't actually like. I, sucked it up when I had to change schools. I never complained or cried or whinged. And basically, at a very young age, started to lose sight of or recognition about what I actually want for myself because I was afraid of being rejected, right? Abandoned. I only had the one parent, and now, you know, I felt compelled to bend over backwards to not lose the other one. And there were glimpses, moments where I might express an opinion about something that was not the same as his, and he would hint towards, you know, abandonment. Not like I'm gonna, you know, drop you off at the nearest orphanage, but that he would be disappointed if I didn't believe in the things he believed in, or you know, do things in a certain way. So, you know, I learned very young to how to pretend to be something I'm not in order to fit in. And then at 12 years old, there was another move going to happen. It was going to take me away from being where I could get to go ride Aunt Peggy's horses. So I asked, could I go live with Aunt Peggy? And that's a pretty bold move for a 12-year-old, right? To go to my father, who I adored and worshipped, and say to him, I don't want to live with you anymore. I want to live with Aunt Peggy. Is that okay? Was a big deal. But he was pretty understanding of that and agreed to it. And Aunt Peggy and her family agreed to it. And that's what happened. So that is most likely the moment where I realized that I do have a say. I can do something to affect my outcomes, right? That I'm not a victim. I have the ability, even at 12 years old, to, you know, make things better for myself. And boy, that was a big deal for me. So one of the things that is most important to me right now, and in this year's clinics, it's 2019, is to be sure that I do my very best to create an environment that makes it safe for everyone to speak their truth. I'm not at all a counselor or a therapist of any sort, but what I do know is that the animal that I have had the most experience with reading is also the animal that I feel is the best reader of bullshit. And I think that oftentimes when we're on this horsemanship journey, we think that what we're there for is not why we're actually there. I think that horses read incongruencies because it comes across as untrustworthy. So when you say one thing, but your body language, when your mouth says one thing and your body language says a different thing, our horses trust the body language. And so this is the year of authenticity for me and rediscovering myself and what I like and what I don't like, and honoring that and being truthful about that and not being apologetic about that, and loving that and growing that in a way that serves others, not in a selfish way. I'm not talking about becoming self-centered. I'm talking about becoming my best self, so that as I discover how to do that, I can help you too. And it's through that journey that the dreams that we have of what we want to be able to accomplish with our horses will be achievable. So for me, this year is going to be about saying yes to the things that sound amazing and saying no to the things that sound tedious, because I feel like this life that we've been given is short and it goes by in a flash. I've had enough loss in my life to recognize when people I love have passed away with regrets, with fear in their heart, with, you know, untapped potential in their being. And I just want to make sure that I'm squeezing every little bit that life has to offer out of it before it's my time to go. And what I want you to know is that I think that becoming a great horseman can do that for you, if you're being honest with me, with yourself, and with your horse. And by honest, I mean truthful about your experience, truthful about your understanding, truthful about your struggles, truthful about your hopes and dreams, wishes, desires, and that what you decide you want for yourself is the right thing for you. That it doesn't have anything to do with your parents, your partners, your family, your friends. It has to do with what burns a fire in your soul. So with that being said, I am going to announce some of my goals for this year, my authentic goals from me that have nothing to do with anyone else. They don't have anything to do with family history or people I love or know or don't know, anyone's opinions of anything. Goal number one, I want to take my Grulamare Vanna to at least one barrel race this year. That's my true, authentic, for me only. I don't give a shit about anyone else's opinion on that. I want to take Vanna to a barrel race. And the goal for that barrel race is going to be to push the limits of what's possible between me and my partner. The only competition I will, you know, engage in that experience will be my own emotional fitness and making sure that my horse thinks that what we did was fun, right? That we enjoyed our time together. My second goal is I want to take some jumping and dressage lessons with my new warm blood. I'm gonna embrace the fact that I am not strongly pulled in one or the other direction. I love the pageantry and the beauty of a nice moving English type sport horse, and I also love and am passionate about a badass, you know, Western sport horse, a cowgirl horse, right? So I don't feel like I need to be one or the other, because that's not who I am authentically. Any competitions that I do, I will most likely keep to myself this year. But just know that when I feel like I've processed that event, I will share it with you. But no matter what, guys, I think that it's important that we take these little moments and really consider what motivates us. Another big theme for me this year that, you know, expands on authenticity is self-awareness. I think that my experience has been that the majority of people I run into are living their lives either wildly inauthentic, like making up shit just so that they can feel better about themselves or trying to fit in or at the very least not get abandoned, or they're wildly unaware of their own emotions, their own struggles. They just get caught up in the day-to-day grind, and as long as you finish the day with your feet still on the top side of the grass, that's the highest goal you could possibly have for that day, right? That the best we can hope for is to get by, to pay the bills, and feed ourselves and feed our animals and things like that. And I want so much more than that out of my life's experience. I grew up observing that in all of the humans around me, that they were wildly frustrated and, you know, unfulfilled and unhappy a good majority of the time. There was so much unhappiness around me as a child, and I just feel like that is a waste of the human experience. That there is a reason why we're capable of feeling joy and love and compassion and empathy and excitement. And that my life's mission is going to be to use my negative emotions as pointers. Anytime I feel unhappy or unfulfilled or frustrated, I'm going to try to take a minute to think about what is that emotion trying to tell me about what I'm up to. And I think that more times than not, that emotion is trying to point you in the direction of where you will find love, joy, fulfillment, excitement, passion, if you just listen to it. And the way to listen to that is to become more self-aware, more observant, not just of the world around you, although I would love it if more people were observant of what's going on around them, but observant of your own thought processes, your own emotions, your own pointers, so that you can become the best version of yourself as possible. And I feel like horses are the best teachers of that, that they're so authentic and such good reflections to us of what we are putting out, that if we just take a minute to read it and accept it, that we can find that fulfillment in our horsemanship that we're looking for. So there you have it, guys. There's my big philosophical rambling for today. I am so thankful for this platform. These last 20 minutes just sitting here in my office talking to you guys about what's been rattling around in my brain is giving me clarity too. And I hope that it sparks something for you in your journey. Please know that if you're studying horsemanship and you're looking for a coach, I'd love to be that coach for you. Reach out to me on any platform that you like. DM me, message me, send me an email at savvydreaming@gmail.com. I'd love to hear from you. If you're enjoying my podcast, I would love it so much if you shared it with anyone that you think might enjoy it as well. Help me grow my audience so that I can use my life's story to make the world a better place for horses and the humans that love them. Thank you so much for listening to me today, guys, and I'll talk to you again real soon. Have a super great day. Thanks. Bye.